It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Today we have Christiane Amanpour from PBS and CNN. We have Lawrence O'Donnell from MSNBC on 1968 and Today. And we have NPR's Mara Liasson first, who might be able to answer this question. Are the following news stories related or independent from each other? About 25 million Americans have ZTE Android smartphones made in China, but have lost access to Google tech support for the phones under an order by the Trump administration. Does your phone fall under this category? The issue was ZTE violation of sanctions against Iran. America's top counterintelligence official testified yesterday that ZTE could also threaten U.S. national security if it gets more of a foothold in the U.S. market. 2 days earlier, President Trump promised help for that Chinese telecom giant ZTE to do business by easing American pressure. What? Are we going in two opposite directions at the same time? 3 days before that, China promised to put about $500 million into an Indonesian project that will help the Trump family business. The White House press office refers questions about the relationship between the Chinese-Indonesia Trump deal and government policy to the Trump family business. Again. A judge rules that the Paul Manafort indictments can go forward because, quote, the special counsel would have been remiss to ignore such an obvious potential link between the Trump campaign and the Russian government, unquote. A private civil suit between an American basketball league and some Qatari businessmen seems to allege that Russia was laundering money through these Qataris to benefit Michael Flynn and maybe others in the Trump administration. And there's a photo of one of the Qataris at Trump Tower with Michael Cohen in 2016. And just this morning, the Senate Judiciary Committee released thousands of pages of testimony related to that other famous Trump Tower meeting between Don Jr., Jared Kushner, Manafort, and some Kremlin-linked Russians, also in 2016. So we'll talk about that and more with my first guest today. She is NPR's national political and White House correspondent, Mara Liasson. Hey, Mara, thanks for giving us some time. Hi. Welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here.
So many dots. Let's see if we can connect some of them.
So many dots.
First on the breaking news, have you made any sense yet of this Senate Judiciary Committee document dump just out this morning on the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting? Is anything new there as far as you can tell?
I haven't gone through it all. I think the thing that is new so far is just the conversations between various members of the Trump team to get their story straight after it became known that they had a June 2016 meeting with this Kremlin-connected lawyer. Whether that's nefarious or not, I don't know. But part of the document dump is communication between Donald Trump Jr. and his lawyer, kind of checking with all of the parties, saying, here's what we're saying. Hopefully you're comfortable with saying nothing more than that. I mean, that could be just standard operating procedure or not.
Right. Although apparently Donald Trump Sr. was involved in either directing or helping to write the language.
We knew that. That isn't new, though.
Yes.
We knew that. That on Air Force One, he drafted a statement that said that the conversation was all about adoption. Adoption is actually a kind of euphemism for sanctions that, among other things, prevented Americans from adopting Russian babies. But and the lawyer who met with the Trump team was hoping to get those sanctions lifted, but she had also, in the run-up to the meeting, her representative had communicated to Donald Trump Jr. that she would have incriminating evidence on Hillary Clinton, and that we know from past disclosures that the Trump team was very interested in hearing that.
All right. So to be continued as you and others pour through those new Senate Judiciary Committee testimony documents. Many of our listeners have heard by now that Trump says he wants to help the Chinese telecom company ZTE. But what's the counterintelligence official angle from yesterday?
What's so interesting about this whole ZTE story is Donald Trump wants to make China great again. I mean, he tweeted about too many Chinese jobs have been lost. ZTE was sanctioned, was penalized by the U.S. government because it violated U.S. sanctions on selling military equipment, certain sanctioned equipment, to Iran and North Korea. They were fined about $1.2 billion. That was so crippling for ZTE that they were about to go out of business. The Chinese leader, Xi, communicated to Donald Trump that as the two countries go into these trade talks, he wanted the sanctions on ZTE, the punishment, lifted. ZTE and other high-tech companies are part of China's vision for how they dominate these industries by 2025. So what I've been told by White House officials is that Donald Trump is in the midst of a bromance with Xi. He really needs Xi because he wants Xi to keep tough sanctions on North Korea. And it sounds like he is willing to give up something that the entire U.S. intelligence community says is important to do, which is block ZTE from doing business in the U.S., not just as a punishment for the fact that they broke sanctions, but also because ZTE's phones, according to the CIA and FBI, can be turned into listening devices on American citizens. They're a threat to national security. And then coincidentally, as you said in your intro, we did hear yesterday that the Chinese government and Chinese banks put a total of about $1 billion in loans into this Indonesian Trump resort project.
What is that project? Can you tell us more about
that? Well, it's a Trump Resort Hotel project. They're licensing their name, as they do often, and they got these loans from China. You know, there are people who are connecting the dots and saying, oh, you know, China offered the Trump family some business in exchange for Trump easing up on ZTE. I don't know if I'm willing to make that leap. I think there are other motivations that you could point to, like the fact that Donald Trump really needs the Chinese to help him in his North Korea strategy. Xi has a lot of leverage over Trump in that effort, and Trump seems very willing to make concessions, big ones, up front. It's puzzling to a lot of people. It certainly is off-brand and off-message for Donald Trump to be helping a Chinese company stay in business.
Also, if it's a Chinese company that makes smartphones and tens of thousands of jobs are dependent in China on them staying in business, and Trump ran centrally on bringing back manufacturing jobs to this country by being tougher on China in particular with respect to trade policies.
Right. It's like I said, it's very off-brand and off-message. You know, the thing that many foreign policy experts have been worrying about as Donald Trump gets ready to go to this historic meeting with the North Korean leader, which also was called into question yesterday. That's another story. They are concerned that he's so eager to make a deal that he will make concessions that will be damaging to United States national security.
Still on ZTE for a minute, I read that 25 million Americans have ZTE phones and recently lost access to their Android updates from Google because Trump's Commerce Department recently ordered Google not to provide tech support. Do you know what happened there?
No, but I think this is all part of seeing ZTE as a national security threat, a cybersecurity threat. And the U.S. military has already said that it no longer will use ZTE phones. That's how concerned they are about the kind of surveillance activities these phones could be used for. So it certainly is damaging to U.S. consumers. On the other hand, you know, this is a national security issue. Not only did they violate U.S. sanctions against selling certain kinds of equipment to Iran and North Korea, their phones have also been described as a potential surveillance tool in the United States that the Chinese could use.
Meanwhile, as you pointed out, North Korea is now saying it might not agree to that June 12th Trump-Kim Jong-un summit after all. Let me play a clip of John Bolton, the new national security advisor, on CBS Face the Nation a couple of weeks ago with the host Margaret Brennan. That's coming up as one of the reasons. Here's that exchange.
Well, arguably, North Korea also walks in a position of some strength, economic weakness perhaps, but this nuclear program is further along than any past administration has encountered.
So because of the mistakes of 25 years of past administrations.
Is it a requirement that Kim Jong-un agree to give away those weapons before you give any kind of concession?
I think that's right. I think we're looking at the Libya model of 2003, 2004. We're also looking at what North Korea itself has committed to previously.
Was it that reference to the Libya model that got North Korea so upset?
Well, we don't know. They referenced John Bolton. They don't like him at all. In the statement they released, they said that, he was repugnant, I think was the word that they used. But there's a lot of things that could have led them to do this. They have objected in the past to the South Korean-U.S. military joint exercises, but they haven't complained recently. They don't like, it seems that they do not like the Libya model that John Bolton talked about. The Libya model was that Libya gave up its nuclear weapons program. It didn't have nuclear weapons. In other words, North Korea is much further along. It actually has nuclear weapons. But Muammar Gaddafi gave them up. And what happened? He was overthrown and he was killed. And North Korea sees the Libya model as the one it wants to avoid, not the one it wants to follow. And North Korea sees its nuclear weapons as an insurance policy, a way to ensure that Kim Jong-un will die as an old man in his bed, not in a nuclear conflagration, because they feel they're in a position of strength. That's one of the reasons they decided to talk in the first place. They've always said that their plan was to become a nuclear power, and then they could go into negotiations in a position of strength. So this threat to scuttle the talks unless the U.S. and South Korea make a concession on these joint military exercises, maybe they're just testing the U.S. to see how far Donald Trump is willing to go, what kind of concessions he's willing to make. So we're not sure. But this certainly is a big snag in the run-up to something that Donald Trump has predicted will be very successful.
NPR's Mara Liasson with us, national political and White House correspondent for NPR. A judge yesterday ruled that the Paul Manafort indictments can go forward, even though they're largely about his financial dealings from before the Trump campaign, because the judge said, quote, the special counsel would have to be remiss to ignore such an obvious potential link between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. So, wow, Mara, that's very intriguing. Do you know what the judge was referring to?
Well, I think that what she said in her statement was that Paul Manafort not only was the chairman of the Trump campaign, but he also did a lot of work for pro-Russian Ukrainian parties and interests. So she is allowing the case to go forward. She seemed to reference another judge's ruling in a separate Manafort claim where he was saying that the special counsel had overstepped its bounds. She clearly disagrees. So the Manafort case goes forward. The problem with covering that story is we cover it inches at a time, and often we cover it as if we're looking at the Mueller investigation through a straw, because he doesn't leak and he doesn't talk and we don't know everything he's up to. But certainly yesterday was a setback for Paul Manafort.
There was a court filing in another case yesterday, a private civil suit between an American basketball league and some Qatari businessmen, that seems to allege that Russia was laundering money through these Qataris to benefit Michael Flynn and maybe others close to Trump in exchange for lifting Russia's sanctions. One of the Qatari businessmen was photographed with Michael Cohen at Trump Tower in 2016. Now, this could not be related to anything but a business dispute, or it could be the missing link in a Trump-Russia sanctions quid pro quo. Rachel Maddow was on this one in detail last night. Have you seen that one yet?
Yeah, no, I haven't. But you pretty much explained it. We don't know whether it's a business deal or part of this connection, something that might be unlawful. We just don't know. But we do know, if we step back a little bit, the bigger question of how the Mueller investigation is playing politically, I can tell you that I've talked to some Republicans who feel that they are being successful, especially with their base, but also with independent voters, at painting the Mueller investigation as a witch hunt. In other words, if it's Donald Trump's long-range strategy to undermine the credibility of the Mueller investigation so much that whatever Mueller comes up with, he can dismiss as fake news, the product of a witch hunt, you know, bogus, they feel they're having some success at that.
And tomorrow—
at shaping public opinion about Mueller.
Right. And tomorrow is the first anniversary of Mueller's appointment as special counsel. Trump has said he'll decide by then whether to voluntarily be interviewed by the Mueller team. Any indications yet what will happen? We might learn that today.
Right. Yes, we don't know what's going to happen with that, but I think that you'll hear on this anniversary, you're going to hear a big Republican chorus of, it's been a year, shut it down. You've had enough time.
Or finish your work and get the public.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Finish your work.
Yeah, they want to shut it down. Well, they want to conflate the two, it seems to me, because everybody would like them to finish their work in a way that the Republican call would be for them not to finish their work, to shut it down. But if Trump, last question, if Trump tries to refuse entirely to be interviewed, are we off to the constitutional crisis races at the Supreme Court to decide if Mueller has the power to subpoena a president?
Yes. I think that it sounded like when Rudy Giuliani made his first kind of round of interviews, it seemed like that the Trump team had settled on a strategy of resistance to an interview and that they were willing to either take the fifth, go all the way to the Supreme Court, be held in contempt even, you know, to basically stiff the special counsel because they seem to conclude that the political risks of doing that were less than the legal jeopardy of exposing him to a perjury charge if he did sit down with Robert Mueller. In other words, both choices are not great for the president, but it seemed like they decided politically it would be better to just kind of, you know, bluster your way through, as Donald Trump has done, you know, in many situations his entire life. So the idea was to avoid a sit down with Mueller at all costs, unless Giuliani could be successful in what he said he wanted, which was to really limit the number of questions, to negotiate some kind of time limit on the sit down, which nobody I've talked to thinks that Mueller would agree to.
NPR national political and White House correspondent Mara Liasson. Mara, thank you so much.
Thank you.